This is the Awful Announcing Podcast.
Three-pointer.
Oh, Hutchins! Double honor!
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, wow! In your life have you seen anything like that?
Oh!
LeBron James with no regard for human life!
Welcome to the AA Podcast.
Maddie. What are you still doing here?
Here's Matt Yoder.
Welcome to the Awful Announcing Podcast. I am Matt Yoder, and we have the band back together. The round table has been set up, and hopefully no Paul Feinbaum's here to destroy our virtual set this week. We do have the four horsemen of the Awful Announcing Podcast back from our Northeast Bureau. Ken Fang joins us. Ken, welcome.
Hello.
Our New Jersey Bureau Chief, Steve Lepore. Steve, thanks for phoning in.
I consider myself to be Mid-Atlantic.
Okay. And then we have the...
Like Little League World Series.
We have the Pennsylvania Turnpike, Harrisburg, PA, somewhere stuck in the wasteland between Pittsburgh and Philly. Joe Lucia is with us tonight. Joe, thanks for taking the time.
Hey, guys, I'm here, the Arn Anderson of Awful Announcing.
He runs the Pennsylvania Bureau.
If anyone out there gets the Arn Anderson... reference, bonus points to them. That makes me maybe the Steve Mongo McMichael, I think. All right, gentlemen, let's start with everything that's been happening and really the reason why we have the roundtable back together. We last met in the winter to talk about NBC's Olympic coverage, and we have another huge story now with everything that has happened with this NFL crisis and really multiple crises, one after the other. Everything that's happened with Ray Rice, Roger Goodell. He's hiding somewhere building Lego houses in his office, I guess. Then you have the Adrian Peterson news drop, now Jonathan Dwyer. What has been the major takeaway from this month, these multiple weeks of NFL scandal, how the media has dealt with it, how the American public has reacted, the role of TMZ's social media, just any broad, piercing takeaway from what we've seen the last few weeks? Let's start with Steve. And then we'll go to Joe and Ken.
Unless NBC had made the announcement or someone had broken the news today that Tara Lipinski and Johnny Weir were going to be their new number one figure skating team, you could have stumped me on anything that had happened from the Olympics this past year after the past couple of weeks.
You don't remember the Norwegian curling pants, Steve?
I will never forget the Norwegian curling pants. Boy, what was the question again?
Tara and Johnny, then now that they're number one, how will this affect NBC's hockey coverage?
I expect it to be a lot more fashionable.
You know, I do think we are hopefully moving towards the day where we can get Doc Emmerich and Johnny Weir in the same booth together, and we're 2 minutes into the podcast, we've already gone off on a horrifying tangent. So...
I'm so sorry.
As Mongo McMichael here, I've got to steer the ship in the right direction. So give me a broad takeaway, Steve, from this week, this month, this whatever of NFL scandal.
It's funny. A lot of people, maybe not a lot, but a few people have compared it to maybe the NFL's Watergate. And I wonder if that's not an incorrect comparison, because after Watergate... This is getting really literal with the comparison here, but the presidency has become slowly and slowly devalued ever since Watergate. I'm wondering if we're going to start to see the NFL slowly but surely devalue. If not, we're not going to see it go downhill. We're not going to see the ratings take a tumble immediately. But I wonder if this isn't the start of a very slow exodus for the NFL from the saturation point, the mega league, the it's been for, I guess, the past 20 to 25 years at least since the Fox deal was signed. I wonder, you know, the ratings are still fine. They were down single digits this week. They were down single digits mostly last week. The CBS Thursday night debut was obviously up because of the story that was so prominent with it. But, you know, we're seeing small drops for the ratings, and I wonder if we're not headed towards the NFL slowly eroding slightly to the point where, you know, maybe they're not the NFL of 2013 or the NFL of, you know, even 2003 anymore. It'll still be big, but I'm wondering if this hasn't damaged the league's reputation to the point where we're not going to see everyone slowly start to back away.
You know, it's interesting, Ken, before you jump in, NBC News just had a poll that asked the American public, were they more or less likely to watch an NFL game and how the domestic violence and child abuse scandals had affected them and their football watching habits. I think it was something like 86% of respondents said that they're watching the same amount of football, but you've still got about 10% there that said, yeah, I'm watching less football in the wake of all this. And then somehow, bizarrely enough, there were 3% of people that said they were watching more football because of domestic violence, which kind of puzzled me and kind of worried me about the state of our union a little bit. But you're right, Steve. I think that shows that maybe, you know, it's not going to be some big overarching grand immediate impact, but you might have a slow trickle of fans out of the game. So, Ken, what about you? Your big takeaway from the past couple of weeks?
I think my takeaway is the NFL, which is a huge public relations-driven league, has had Roger Goodell hide under his desk for the last 9 days since the interview he had with Nora O'Donnell of CBS News. There hasn't been a hand-picked interview with perhaps Deion Sanders of the NFL Network, which I might have expected by now. And there have been a lot of mistakes by the National Football League. So a lot of public relations errors, and I know that some of the public relations guys, I've met them personally. I know this probably pains them to see how this is being handled, and it's really strange to see how the NFL has been scrambling ever since the Ray Rice video, the second one's put out by TMZ. It's really, really interesting to see how this league has been overshadowed and how it's transcended to other shows like the View has talked about it. CBS's show The Talk has done shows on it. This is transcended sports, and right now it's a nightmare for the National Football League.
All right, Joe, let's get your take on what you've seen in the past couple of weeks that stands out most to you.
I mostly agree with Steve and Ken on all of their points. But what I also did notice is that for as disastrous as this last week or two has been, it's still impossible to escape talk about the league. It's everywhere. Even when you consciously try to avoid it, it's there. You go out to a bar and all the TVs are on the game. You even went out for brunch on Sunday during the games. TVs up everywhere, pregame shows, the games that weren't even of local teams. You cannot escape it, even when there's just this PR disaster going on. And it's going to take a while for all of this to take an effect. It's not something that's going to happen overnight. Like Steve was saying, it's not going to be everyone's going to turn the TV off and we're going to see ratings drop 30%. But right now, it's as inescapable as ever. And I actually think that's a little shocking. I didn't completely expect it to just stay everywhere and not at least drop off a little bit in public.
And you just wonder, guys, is this a cloud that's going to hang over the entire 2014 season? And Ken, I want to jump back to your point. Where is Roger Goodell exactly? What is he doing? I mean, I'm becoming seriously concerned about his whereabouts and personal safety at this point. I mean, is he actually still alive? Is he still in the country? Has he fled to Bermuda? Where is this guy?
I think we're going to have to do a Where's Waldo or a Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego type of game to find the guy. This is really strange. He has canceled appearances in Carolina. He was supposed to be in San Francisco. Actually, not San Francisco. Californians will kill me for saying San Francisco. Santa Clara on Sunday for the debut at Levi's Stadium. He has canceled all type of appointments. I mean, I like Peter King's suggestion of him doing one press conference, inviting all the media in, even if that means taking questions from Inside Edition and TMZ, as well as the insiders like Adam Schechter and Peter King and the rest. Do it. Get it out of the way. His answers aren't going to satisfy everybody, but still, do it now. Do it sooner than later before it just gets to be ridiculous. I mean, going back to the history lesson that Steve gave us in regards to Watergate, you kind of harken back to when Jimmy Carter was in the White House for the Iran hostage crisis. It worked for a little bit, but then it came to be the point where it was ridiculous, where Carter was stuck in the White House. It didn't come out, and he was seen as aloof. This is even worse. Goodell is not even being seen as aloof. He's just being seen as an idiot. So just make an appearance, do your press conference, answer questions, and I think everybody will get off your back.
I think that's the first Jimmy Carter reference on an Awful Announcing podcast. So thank you, Ken, for adding in the American history perspective for something that is well before the time of myself, Joe, and Steve.
Oh, by the way, Devin Hester just scored again, so the Atlanta now leads 500-0 over Tampa Bay on Thursday Night Football. I'm sure CBS is really pleased about the ratings tonight.
And you know, this is what I just tweeted. You would think CBS was supposed to get the good Thursday night games. Now, good being a relative term, of course, with how the quality of play on Thursday Night Football has been, well, suboptimal, as our Men in Blazers friends would say. But yeah, this has been atrocious and a great night for ESPN, because right now they've got a competitive top 25 game between Auburn and Kansas State. You wonder, maybe Goodell's there just watching the game in a trench coat or something. Maybe he's out hiding in Manhattan, Kansas. But it really is baffling that here you have this guy who has paid a $44 million salary. Everyone from Bill Simmons to U.S. congressman is calling for his job. You would think, guys, that this would be the time that he would step out in front. He would come out to the balcony. He would, you know, make the statement and say, look, I'm here to lead through this crisis. I'm here to earn my paycheck, win back the trust of the American public. And I cannot remember a time when someone that is supposed to be in a leadership position has been so mind-numbingly absent. I mean, if we look back, guys, just to this summer and what Adam Silver did to get the NBA through the Donald Sterling mess, what Goodell has done in the last 10 days is at the complete opposite end of the spectrum.
Yeah, I mean, unless he comes out, like, guns blazing in the next couple days with some kind of all-encompassing, gigantic policy that takes care of every issue the league has had over the past few months, then I don't know what he's doing. It's bizarre to not see him even out there trying to fan the flames a little bit. Unless he's trying to just let all the chaos burn itself out, but it looks like the blaze is just getting bigger and bigger.
Steve, I'll ask you this question. What did you make of Adam Schefter and Chris Mortensen and the like having to go out on ESPN after the commissioner and all the reports were that the NFL did not see the videotape? Of course, it was made public. We saw Adam Schefter probably as angry as we've ever seen him. Chris Mortensen stood by his report of what he saw in the videotape, or what his sources saw in the videotape, beg your pardon. And then you had Peter King kind of in this weird position where he backtracked from what he had reported in July after the NFL made their statement. What do you make of what this scandal and these controversies have done to NFL insiderdom and how it's just shaken things up in that elite reporting level of the NFL, how we look at these sources now maybe a little differently than we did a couple months ago?
It's interesting because you've never really seen Schefter or Mortensen or King sort of bamboozled like this. And it's sort of seeped into how ESPN has covered the NFL recently. We've seen ESPN kind of turn on the league in the past week or so in a way I don't think they've ever turned on any league. I mean, you saw 10 years ago, we're looking back on the 10th anniversary of Todd Bertuzzi's attack on Steve Moore for the Vancouver Canucks and the Colorado Avalanche. And we saw a lot of NHL fans accuse ESPN of really turning on the league back then. What they did was nothing compared to what we've seen ESPN sort of – we've seen, you know, Chris Carter and Hannah Storm and Schefter sort of – call out the league publicly and call out the league in a way that no league has ever seen itself called onto the carpet by any particular network that covers it before. I think it's really interesting to see where you've seen sort of a network other than Chris Berman, who obviously, you know, just sort of...
And the punt is blocked! The punt is blocked! Sorry. Go ahead, like, Steve. Where were you?
I mean, you remember that line in the ESPN book where Berman talked about playmakers saying, if the league is pissed, then I guess I should be pissed. But other than him, you've sort of seen overarching turn against the league from the network, which I think could be a real key in how the NFL has been perceived throughout this. No one has carried the water for them. Even Peter King has sort of backtracked away from his original sort of muffed handling of this. No one is carrying the league's water. No one is, not even CBS, when they had the NFL Network on Thursday night. James Brown was able to deliver that commentary without seeming out of line, without getting in any trouble. No one has carried the water for the NFL, and that's, I think maybe that's the most shocking thing, is that everyone has sort of been held accountable for their role in this, and everyone has been sort of called onto the carpet for this.
And especially that might be surprising considering the NFL's past with League of Denial and everything with the concussion reporting, shutting down playmakers at ESPN. I mean, this is a league with a very definable history of holding their television partners kind of in a hammer lock and putting them down on the table and making them cry uncle when need be. And yet here you have all of these different personalities, as you said, Steve, really calling the league to task. And I thought that was most interesting with Peter King. You know, he writes this column calling on Roger Goodell to have a press conference, and which, considering all things, is maybe as critical as we've seen Peter King of Roger Goodell. And yet, because of the sourcing issues there, because of his backtracking, you've got questions and more focus on his anonymous league source that understands the mindset of Roger Goodell, which could literally mean anybody, saying that Goodell, and I had to laugh at this quote, wants to be a leader in the domestic violence space, as if it is some kind of definable area, like you want to be a leader in the tech space or the fast food industry. Well, Roger Goodell wants to be a leader in the domestic violence space. It's like, good Lord, what are these people thinking? But there was more attention paid to that and Peter King's sources and how that is all playing out legitimacy-wise than there was his actual challenges of Roger Goodell. And to me, that's the most interesting element here, is that you look at the entire scope of not just the NFL, but also its reporting with more skepticism, don't you, Ken?
I agree with that, and I agree with Steve's point that the NFL is no longer this 800-pound gorilla. I mean, it's probably going to be reduced probably down in half to a 400-pound gorilla, where the networks can actually start challenging them and say, look, you know, you don't hold credibility with us right now, so we're just not going to listen to your orders, or just, you know, we're going to there's going to be some pushback there. And absolutely true, because the way the NFL has handled this and the way that the networks have looked at times kowtowing to the NFL, to their wishes and bowing down to them, now they're feeling probably to the point where they can now do some pushback here and get something back in return, because we've seen, as Steve said, what ESPN has done with Keith Olbermann taking the lead, especially calling on Goodell to resign, not just recently, but going even back into August with the Ray Rice situation, the Hannah Storm commentary, the James Brown commentary. And I'm sure now in the wake of even more domestic violence stories, we'll probably see even stronger commentaries from the network partners. So I think that this story has emboldened them, and we're going to wait and see and see what happens over this particular weekend. But man, this has been probably the worst month and the worst start of a season for the NFL that I can remember. And I go back way back before you guys. So, but it's one of those situations where it's just every day or every minute you turn, or there's a new story coming out and the NFL looks even worse.
I'll open this up to everyone.
Matt, if I may interject.
Yeah, go ahead, Steve.
I wonder if we're not seeing the response to somewhat of the incredible arrogance that the NFL occasionally displays, and not just occasionally, but always. I mean, look in October. The NFL, for years, Fox has had a Sunday night World Series game, and almost every year, without fail, the late afternoon game is on Fox to give that World Series game a lead-in. This year, Fox's World Series game has no lead-in. CBS has the late game that day. The Sunday night game is Saints-Packers, which are two completely MLB-free markets. That's driving the nail in as far as as far as the NFL is concerned. That is spiking the football. That is where the league's hubris has brought it, that it is just going to try and destroy everything and just try and be out for itself. I mean, I wonder if you're not seeing a lot of people maybe look at this and say, you know what, the NFL needs to be taken down a couple of pegs. The NFL could use a couple of scandals like this, not to make light of them, but you know, maybe the NFL is sort of getting its just desserts for sort of not only understanding its untouchable place in the sports universe, but flaunting it.
And I think that's a great point, Steve, because we all know the internet does nothing better in 2014 than righteous outrage, whether it's placed well or not. And I think that the outrage toward the NFL has probably been building up for some time. So I think that's why we've seen so much outpouring of raw emotion and anger and frustration and outrage toward the NFL, is because they have been so untouchable for so long. I think that's a very well-spoken, well-stated point, Steve. I want to open this up to all of you guys, because really the genesis of this was TMZ releasing the Ray Rice video. That story was done and dusted. Yeah, there was some discontent with a 2-game suspension, but it was largely settled. Then the Rice video comes out, and the entire ball game changes. If you were to name a sports media person in 2014, a person of the year, an entity of the year, might be TMZ, considering what they did with Donald Sterling releasing that audio. Now, with Ray Rice in the video, I mean, they have fundamentally changed the NBA and the NFL, arguably the two biggest professional sports leagues in America. Their impact, I don't think, can be overstated in how the year in sports has played out.
Yeah, I mean, it's huge. And who else would you go with, really? They had such an impact this year compared to everything else we saw. There weren't really that many huge stories aside from this NFL chaos and the Sterling thing. TMZ was at the forefront of both of them. They did their thing like TMZ does. And what they did, I mean, it should be person of the year for TMZ or however you want to call it this year. I'm actually kind of stunned that they kind of got this like reputation a little bit of kind of being this like serious newsbreaker. It's mostly just like the gossipy type thing, but these were two really serious stories that they kind of got out in front of and just broke wide open and threw everything in the chaos.
Is that ultimately a good or a bad thing for sports journalism and the sports world, if TMZ now has this position where they are breaking these major stories?
Well, whether it's good or bad, I think it's going to happen, because we live in an age where we want information. We want it now. We want everything now. And we want it to last as long as possible until there's another thing that we can have. TMZ, whether it's good or bad, is the right, I don't want to necessarily say morally right, but it's the right place for the way we consume sports media now. I'd like to also point out that TMZ, despite their celebrity news, I mean, they broke Michael Jackson's death, they broke the Chris Brown Rihanna situation, and they've broken these stories. When they have something, no matter how they get it, it's usually correct, and it's usually illuminating something that we sort of need to know about, and we sort of deserve to know about. You know, they're a messy company, but yeah, Harvey Levin is sports person of the year. I don't know if he knows a blue line from a clothesline, as Al Michaels once said, but it's certainly, especially with the attitude he's taken towards the NFL, they're not connected to them. They never will be connected to them. So he's basically saying, you know what, screw them if they're going to act like this.
And just as you were giving that answer, Steve, Kansas State just missed their third field goal of the game. This one, a 22-yarder. I feel like Mike Francesa here is like, I can't do play-by-play. I can't do play-by-play, but Kansas State just missed a 22-yard field goal to tie Auburn. There's my bad Mike Francesa impression of the day.
College kickers.
Which, gentlemen, we call in the business a segue, because let's leave the NFL behind. We had a good half-hour discussion on that. Let's move to some other issues, maybe lighten the mood a little bit. And let's talk about Mike Francesa and this increasingly strenuous position he finds himself in at Fox Sports 1 with being preempted on the simulcast and threatening lawsuits with CBS Radio, and Fox Sports has no idea what they're doing. Now, we saw Eric Shanks, president of Fox Sports, say, you know, they want to work things out with Francesa, but right now, guys, I'm wondering if this lasts a couple more weeks, let alone months or into the next year. Ken, I know you're a big Francesa guy. Where do you think the line is on when this relationship between the Pope and Fox Sports 1 finally ends?
I think it's October because, you know, as Steve pointed out on Twitter a while ago, that there's going to be preemptions for baseball on Fox Sports 1. He's not going to be on there. He is on Fox Sports 2 tomorrow through all the NASCAR stuff. But it's funny how he treats this whole thing. And whether he did or whether he didn't get a cease and desist letter from CBS Radio to not talk about the simulcast, for some reason, Francesa will find a way to talk about it no matter what. He's one of those guys that it's comic relief when we talk about him, and it's comic relief when I tweet his accent on Twitter. But, you know, he's one of those guys who is a giant in New York the way he is in sports radio. I mean, he didn't get to WFAN without being an idiot, even though sometimes he acts like one. But I think that overall, I think whether his representatives didn't vet Fox Sports 1 very well when they signed that contract, I don't understand what they were thinking. He's not really a national guy. He's more of a New York guy. We've seen that with the ratings when he's preempted by even the Europa League. So I just think that this relationship has to come to an end sooner than later, and for his sake, and for him to go to MSG Network, which will be much better for him. There'll be no preemptions, and he'll be able to be on without any problems with there whatsoever, unless there's a Ranger game that decides, or Knicks game that preempts him. But he can tolerate that better than he can NASCAR or the Champions League.
At Francesa's representatives, remember, he doesn't do this deal himself or his agent even one-on-one with Fox Sports 1. This is CBS Sports Radio negotiating the deal. It seems to have been horribly vetted. I mean, the fact is, there are probably going to be weeks coming up in October where he's off four to five days a week just because Fox Sports 1 has better programming and more deserving programming. I mean, who really thought this was going to be a good idea from the start? Why was this ever going to work? What in Eric Shanks' wildest dreams was this going to do for them? I mean, it turns the lights on at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and it gives you 4 hours of programming, but it's not programming that anyone's watching. It's not programming that's going to beat ESPN or ESPN2 in those hours. It might not even beat ESPNU or ESPN News in those hours on some days. It's a confounding deal. It has been from the start, and it looks like it's going to keep being that until it mercifully dies and Francesa goes to MSG.
You know, it's funny. It's almost like Mike Francesa, the minute he fell asleep on air, everyone in our arena in the sports blogosphere discovered that this guy was a viral sensation. And with the parody Twitter accounts that have come up and all the clips of prank callers, which is maybe one of the top five favorite posts I've ever done, is the collection of Mike Francesa versus prank callers. But we saw viral clip after viral clip, and it's like the guys at Fox thought, man, we better bring this guy in because he'll pop ratings in the afternoon, we'll have something live. And they almost didn't stop to consider, wait a minute, how many people around the nation are actually going to sit down and watch a simulcast of a New York sports talk radio show? And that's what gets me. It's almost like you look at what Fox Sports 1 and Fox Sports 2 have done in this first year, and to think that that could be an answer or a solution to some of their ratings issues really does boggle the mind. And to think that that situation wasn't vetted and wasn't cleared and it wasn't communicated, hey, you're going to have a lot of soccer or NASCAR practice or live events that's going to double and triple and quadruple and, you know, whatever, 10 times the rating is, that was clearly going to happen, and it had to happen. And yet here we are in this situation where it's almost caught Francesa by surprise, and he's expressed so much anger or frustration with Fox Sports 1, and you just wonder, how much longer is it going to take for the lawyers to figure a way out of this for both sides? And Joe, I wonder, if I get you in here on this, does this say more about Fox Sports 1 and their troubles to find some reliable programming than it does about Francesa being able to resonate, connect with a national audience?
I think it's a little bit of both. You mentioned about him being a viral sensation and all that. In the 6 months he's been on Fox Sports 1, I know the YouTube account that we used to love got taken down, but...
Shout out to Audio Mongo, formerly known as WFAN Audio, if he's listening, or she.
Over the last 6 months, like, how many of those clips have we even come across? There hasn't been any of that. I think that's a lot of what Fox is banking on. And most of the talk about him has been how he's angry at Fox, how he's ripping on Joel Klatt, how he doesn't know who Julia Stewart Binks is, and so on and so forth. It's not the usual insanity you expect from him. It's just, like, petty high school stuff that no one cares about and does nothing but turn you off of the program instead of trying to drag you in.
Petty high school stuff, that sounds like sports media in a nutshell.
There we go. All right, let's stay with Fox. Another big story that broke this week. Gus Johnson stepping down from his post as Fox lead soccer announcer. How surprised were you guys at that news? Because I know when I saw the Deitch column drop that news was breaking, I was disappointed that this grand experiment had ended so early. But to me, there wasn't really that surprise factor there, given that he had given it a try. Fans clearly had not taken a liking to Gus Johnson, soccer announcer, and it was just such an uphill battle to get him ready, not for 2018, I mean, that's off in the distance, but even for the 2015 Women's World Cup, that it was probably a smart decision now just to blow it up, resign it to the history books, and start over. So I'll open that up to you guys, what you thought about that move.
I'll say that I wasn't surprised, but just kind of stunned. I am obviously, you know, as a soccer fan, not thrilled with Gus calling the games, but I'm not anti-Gus calling the games. I think Gus had the right voice for soccer, in my opinion. Maybe not the knowledge, probably not the knowledge, definitely not the knowledge, but he had the right voice for it. It's not wrong to think of Gus's NCAA tournament calls and then look at the way you see some of these Champions League and Premier League games and some of the World Cup broadcasts. I mean, John Champion yelling out Spain's embarrassment is complete in the first game of the World Cup. Does that not sound like a Gus Johnson moment to everyone else here? I mean, I think the idea was in the right place, but the fact is Gus wasn't getting nearly enough reps. What was he calling, half a dozen games a year when there was no Gold Cup? He wasn't getting enough reps. He was saddled with, you know, inconsistent at best and not very good at worst color commentators.
Which I think is a kind assessment, by the way.
that's me putting the kid gloves on. That's pretty much, you know, it's going to be a disaster if that's the case. He wasn't going to get enough reps to be any good at it. He wasn't probably going to do MLS once Fox got it. He willfully admitted that he didn't know much about the women's game, so that was going to be a problem. And I think Fox just, you know, had to cut away a massive headache, which is what they should do with Francesa if they can figure out a way to do it. But with Gus, they finally figured out a way to make that problem go away. Of course, whomever they hire next, that could be a whole other problem. But for now, the problem is going away.
I think everyone's heart was in the right place with Gus on soccer. They thought it would work out well because of, like Steve mentioned, his voice and his propensity with the big calls and all that. But it just didn't work. And even though it took them, 2 years to cut bait, I'll give them credit for actually cutting bait and right now instead of just sticking to it and pressing forward. and just still going nowhere. At least now they can focus in another direction, get everything on the right track, and we won't have to just deal with this charade anymore.
Yeah, and the whole thing is, and as Steve rightly pointed out, the fact is that he had the Women's World Cup coming up next year, and he didn't really know the women's game. He was calling the men's game. He had improved quite a bit from his very first game, which was absolutely awful, but he absolutely did need the reps. And for him to, I don't know where he would have started with a World Cup qualifying for the women's side. I don't know where he would have jumped in, but he would have come in cold, and I don't think that would have been right for him or right for the game and right for fans. So, whomever Fox hires, whether it's Martin Tyler for the 2018 World Cup in Russia, or whomever they hire, if JP Della Camara for the Women's World Cup next year, it had better be a good hire, because you know soccer fans are waiting, and the bar has been raised high with ESPN, and ESPN, you know, it's a long way from having Dave O'Brien call the games back in 2006, but we're at a point now where American soccer fans expect the best. They want the best. They want the game treated with some gravitas, using a Richard Deitch word there. And I think that hopefully Fox has learned a lesson from this.
You know, it's funny, though. When you look at this entire situation and all of the hullabaloo that was made about Gus Johnson, the American voice, you know, Americanizing the sport and taking the sport on the next step, I think, you know, as you guys said, I think their heart was in the right place. That, you know, having Gus Johnson succeed and thrive as a number one soccer announcer, I think it would have broken down some significant barriers and been important for the sport, important in how it's presented on television, instead of having to import the best voices from overseas. I think to get to that next level, to where this nation or this soccer nation wants to be, I think having American voices be the best is important in that. Now, it may not be the end-all and be-all that some make it out to be, but I think it is significant. That's why, to me, looking back, it is so baffling that neither Fox nor Gus Johnson really put in the time to ensure that it would be a success. Because when you throw an announcer for his first televised soccer game onto Real Madrid and Manchester United and the Champions League, I mean, you are just setting this up to be an epic failure. You are dooming this from the absolute beginning. What Fox should have done is sent Gus out there to the CONCACAF Champions League and have him call Cruz Azul and LA Galaxy in front of 400 people. I mean, that's where he should have put in the reps, put in his time, learned how to actually announce the game. Then you could go to Europe, then you can go to the big stadiums, then you can go to the World Cup and actually be ready. I mean, you wouldn't take a high schooler out and put them under center for the Dallas Cowboys. It didn't make any sense from the get-go. And the fact that they didn't really put in the work to make it success, to me, is the most damning element in all of this. And kind of tangentially to that, you've got Fox, who is really at the lowest end of the totem pole when it comes to soccer coverage. Well behind, I think, production-wise, quality-wise, ESPN and NBC. Now they have the World Cup, and I think soccer fans are looking at this and thinking, man, what is Fox going to do now? So how do you guys see them moving forward and really lifting their game to that bar that ESPN and NBC have set? Because right now, I think, speaking for American soccer fans, there's not a lot of confidence in Fox that they can do the job.
Well, just to end on your point about Gus, I mean, last night I watched JP Della Camera and Brian Dunseth call a CONCACAF Champions League game for Montreal, and this afternoon I watched them call a UEFA Champions League game for Spurs and Partizan. And why couldn't that have been Gus? Why couldn't they have sat Gus in a studio with an analyst and had him call, you know, even if he's not able to do, you know, every day, when you get him for a few days, have him just call a bunch of games off a monitor and give him the experience. You were right. They completely dumped him into the fire with this, and Gus, in a way, dumped himself into the fire with this. Says, going forward, I wonder if the notion, and I tweeted about this, but I wonder if it's not as simple as finding an American voice. I think what Fox has to do is find a voice that works for them, for European soccer and a voice that works for them for MLS and for Women's World Cup and for U.S. Men's National Team qualifying. Why not go for both? And that way, when you're in Russia in 2018, you're starting off with two great soccer voices, and you're starting off too deep on your bench. I mean, Ian Dark's contract will be up eventually, maybe not in time for the Women's World Cup, but why not bring someone like him or John Champion or Peter Drury, who I've seen appearing live on NBC Sports Network before matches lately, which I don't know has happened with someone other than Arlo White a lot on their coverage. Why not get someone to be the voice of their European football coverage, and why not, you know, keep the MLS person specific to MLS, to U.S. Men's National Team coverage, to U.S. Women's National Team coverage, to the Women's World Cup. So that way, you've started by building a specific, building soccer coverage on two specific fronts, and you're more ready for when these international tournaments come up. Don't forget, Copa America is in 2 years. It's not been confirmed that Fox is going to get the rights, even though it seems like it's going to happen and it would make sense for them because they have the CONCACAF rights. But they're going to need to have announcers for that. They're going to need to have announcers for pretty much every major soccer event over the next 4 years, save for Euro and save for about half of MLS and half of the national team. So I don't understand why they don't just start building and building and building. There's a chance to build a real soccer empire. As far as TV broadcasting goes in the United States. And they've done it with the rights, but they haven't done it in terms of the commentators.
Yeah, I'll agree with that. And not only that, it's if they were thinking about the inventory, but not thinking about the talent and production-wise. I mean, not only that, there's a possibility they could get the English Premier League back sometime next year when the bidding comes up for grabs. But then again, they would be probably depending on the world feed for those games, like they did in the past. But you're right, Steve. They should be start thinking about the production. They should start thinking about the talent. It's as if they thought about it. It was an afterthought. They thought, well, we got Gus. Let's just throw him in on the games right now, and then let's see where we go from there. And let's see what happens, and throw it against the wall and see if it sticks. And for me, it just didn't work. But you know, they've got to go thinking like, if they want to do a stopgap measure. JP Della Camara has experience, but I know he doesn't. He's been an afterthought for ESPN. They threw him on radio this year for the World Cup, and all of that for South Africa as well. But you know, maybe give him a chance to call the Women's World Cup, and they can give him one last major international championship, and let him be the lead voice for that, and then they can go out on top. At least he can go out on top on that.
All right, let's say you guys are in charge of Fox Soccer. What do you do now in this situation? I like Steve's point. If I'm in charge, you know, I go after, see if I can get maybe Phil Shane and Ray Hudson from BN Sport. That'd be my number one objective, get Ray Hudson on a major network. Realistically, though, you know, you get a guy like John Strong or JP Della Camera, maybe John Strong, since he's a bit of a younger voice. Invest in him, make him the face of your American soccer coverage, U.S. national team, MLS, all that. You throw a Brinks truck in front of Taylor Twellman's house, try to snatch him from ESPN to kind of maybe add that legitimacy and consistency that you haven't gotten from your lead analyst. And then you play to the strengths of your corporate synergy with Sky Sports in the U.K. I mean, this is all under Rupert Murdoch's nice little corporate umbrella. And you let Martin Tyler call whatever game he is calling for Sky Sports and just syndicate it. And, you know, if you can bring him in for the World Cup, so be it. I think that would be a sensible, realistic, and I think a path that would allow Fox to succeed and gain some credit with soccer fans. So I'll give you guys each the choice. You're in charge of Fox Soccer. Who are you hiring for that lead spot? Let's go Joe, then Ken, and then Steve.
I am not nearly smart enough to make recommendations, but I agree with almost everything you said, Matt. They need to do something. There are plenty of voices out there they can get, and the names you mentioned are pretty much the same guys I would go after. It would probably take a lot of money to bring in that kind of talent, but this is Fox. Money's not really much of an option.
Yeah, I'll say Martin Tyler should be the lead voice for the World Cup and any international soccer games that they have in Europe for the Champions League and the Europa League. As far as the studio is concerned, if I'm the head of Fox, I get rid of Eric Winalda because he's just been absolutely awful. I think he's there to troll soccer fans, and we've seen it during the World Cup. That would be one of my moves. And I like your recommendation about John Strong as the voice of MLS. I think he's a good young voice, and I think they should be consider him as for their MLS voice. Steve?
Yeah, I fully agree on John Strong for the MLS and for the American stuff. Personally, I wonder if Martin Tyler's not a little bit too dry for the Fox attitude to me. What about someone like John Champion, perhaps? I think he showed, while he's 100% a professional, he showed a little bit of flair for the dramatic and for the clever turn during the World Cup. And, you know, when I spoke to him in August or in late August, he seemed open to the idea of working at least for Americans, if not in America again. I wonder if he's not the type of voice that Fox would go after, even though, you know, Sky Sports is under the same banner. Martin Tyler just has never, right or wrong, and Martin Tyler is probably one of the greatest soccer announcers of all time. Right or wrong, I wonder if he really fits in with the Fox attitude or the fun guys. I think John Champion might be a better fit for that network, but I'm in full agreement that John Strong is right for the American version of that job, and I'm fully in agreement that Eric Winalda is not very good either. So I think they have to take a hammer to it and get rid of pretty much anything that's not Rob Stone at this point.
Well, none of us are in charge at Fox, and we all know that Joe Buck's going to be the guy. So, I mean, take everything that we have just said with a grain of salt there. Joe, yeah, I want to move...
one for you, by the way, Matt.
Joe, I want to move to a topic a bit closer to your heart as we begin to wrap up things here. And that's a look at the baseball postseason. Now, I may not be the guy to try and analyze this, given I've probably watched more Australian football this season than I have Major League Baseball. But give me your opinion on where MLB sits heading into the postseason, ratings-wise. I know there's been a lot of doom and gloom about the national numbers, especially on Fox Sports 1, as I think people are having trouble finding games on that network. But we've seen some positive signs regionally, and I know everyone involved in baseball wants to say, you know, the game is as healthy as it's ever been, attendance-wise, local-wise, but... And for whatever reason, it's not breaking through on national television. Do you see a doom and gloom October again, given the markets involved and, you know, no Red Sox, potentially no Yankees? Or do you see that maybe there might be some brighter news here in the MLB postseason?
Well, the Fox ratings have obviously been a complete disaster this year. They have been ugly to look at. But a lot of the local ratings are just through the roof, and the local RSNs are paying teams for those local ratings. You saw the Dodgers deal. What was it? $7 or $8 billion, I believe. The Astros got a ton of money, even though CSN Houston has now fallen apart. The Phillies got a ton of money. That's where all of the money is going. It's not going into these national deals where you see the NFL getting, what, like $8 billion over 8 years for ESPN and such. It's the local contracts that are getting all of the money, and even though those teams that are getting most of the really great local ratings won't be in the playoffs this year, I think they're still going to do decently overall. I mean, when you look at baseball's ratings, people love to compare them through the years. And it's a cliche to say that TV numbers are down across the board, because they are. It's not just baseball, it's everything. Could you imagine seeing some of these quote-unquote top shows on television if they had the ratings they're pulling in every week? Compared to 15, 20 years ago, they'd be disasters. Now they're huge hits. People have so many more options and so on and so forth. They can do whatever they want. I think the networks are doing a pretty decent job covering the game this year with the new TV deals. You see all of the extra games on Fox now. ESPN is getting one of the wild card games this year. TBS hasn't really been in the action that much till the second half, and even then, you don't hear anything about the TBS games anymore. I know Steve had the interview with Pedro Martinez that I believe ran today. He'll be back for the postseason this year, which is something that everyone is extremely excited about. I don't know if they're going to do incredible numbers. They probably won't. They'll probably lose the average viewership race to the NBA Finals once again. But that's just the nature of the beast. I don't think anyone's going to get too upset if the World Series average is like a 9 rating. It is what it is at this point, and all we can really do is accept it.
Well, the fact is you're looking at the lowest rated playoffs in MLB history just for the fact that the Bucs is going to broadcast only 2 games of the NLCS and the World Series. Just because you're migrating more to cable, you're going to see the lowest rated playoffs in history. Now, what I think MLB may have working for it is something that maybe hasn't worked for it in the past. You're going to see a lot of pockets of the country ensconced in baseball, for lack of a better word, over there. I mean, you've got Kansas City and St. Louis.
Ensconced, by the way. I think Ken dropped our first Jimmy Carter reference. I think that's our first ensconced mention on a podcast. And coming at 51 minutes in, Steve, I think that's our gold achievement of the day.
We're turning more into All Things Considered every day. So you're looking at...
Wait, don't tell me. We'll be okay.
And I think you're looking at, you know, Kansas City and St. Louis are probably both going to be in the playoffs. So if you've got that region of the country completely enveloped in baseball, Baltimore and Washington, both Los Angeles teams, unless the A's continue to completely fall apart, both Bay Area teams, you're going to see MLB sort of be able to hold a monopoly on certain and not small markets of the country for this playoffs. I think that's what might help it. It's always going to take, you know, a 5-game series or a 7-game series to drive the ratings up to big numbers, to big numbers in the playoffs. That's just the nature of the beast now. And the regular season ratings are kind of a disaster. Fox Sports 1's package had lower ratings than NBC's Wednesday night rivalry. I mean, if you told me 10 years ago that a hockey package would have higher ratings than a national baseball package, I'd have told you you were nuts. But the fact is, they are reliant on the local ratings to draw that revenue. That works for them. That's great. The national ratings aren't going to be terrific, but if they get a good playoffs, MLB will still wield some muscle.
And Ken, what's funny to me about this is, you have a team like Kansas City, and everyone says, oh, man, this is so great for baseball. Everyone's going to be rooting for Kansas City. You know, how wonderful it would be to have the Royals back in the postseason. But you can bet if the Royals make a postseason run, and maybe, heaven forbid, they make the World Series this year, you can bet a lot of those same writers, those same columnists, are going to be moaning about record low ratings if the Royals are in the World Series and if that does happen. It's this double-edged sword. We want these smaller markets to succeed. We want parity in these non-NFL sports. But when it happens and those big markets don't drive numbers, we're like, man, the sport is suffering because of it. So it's just amazing that all of these non-NFL sports that have to rely on big market teams to drive viewership, they have to deal with these realities.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And, you know, we'll hear the Phil Mushnicks of the world and the like, and Bob Racemans based out of New York saying, oh, these baseball ratings are terrible. Nobody's watching. But the thing is that when the World Series comes again up in prime time, it'll win the night for Fox. It always does. It always will. Because it's original programming, and it'll do well. It'll win the night. It'll be as rated as high as the 1991 World Series between Minnesota and Atlanta? No, it won't be. But then again, nothing is as rated as high as Joe pointed out from that period. So the fact it's apples and oranges, and the fact is that you know, yeah, Boston isn't going to be in it this year. The Yankees aren't going to be in it this year. But there is still the possibility of the Dodgers being in it, and you know, there are some big market teams in this, and they will have some national appeal in it. So baseball will do well, especially on the cable networks. I think Fox Sports 1 will get a record rating for their baseball playoffs. That's what they are depending on. And it's also about building that network. So I think that's why they went really heavy with the NLCS this year on FS1, and probably doing the same thing next year for the ALCS as well. So I would not be surprised. As Steve said, it's going to be the lowest rated postseason on television ever. But then again, for a cable audience, it's probably going to be very good. And TBS is going to be very happy about having its ratings for the postseason as well.
It'll be very interesting to follow as October moves on. As we finish up, I want to end on this note. Broncos fans are sending around a petition to ban Phil Simms from their team's games. I can't remember which Denver sportscaster or Broncos writer tweeted this out, but the Broncos are undefeated in something like their last 12 or 13 games that Jim Nance and Phil Simms have called. So maybe banning them isn't exactly the brightest idea, but I wonder this from our sports media scribes. Has there ever been an announcer you wish that you could ban from your favorite team's games, whether that be for a bias that you have seen this announcer display or from general annoyance? Has there ever been an announcer that you felt that strongly about that you would want to ban them from ever doing your team's games again?
Tim McCarver was it for me as a Red Sox fan. I mean, Tim McCarver was hated so much by the Red Sox fans, but then I also found out he was hated as much by Yankees fans as well. So he must have been doing something right, because I think he's hated by every single Major League Baseball team, so baseball team's fan base. So Tim McCarver, the fact that he is no longer doing national games, I think has been great for fans, but also at the same time, we also managed to get Harold Reynolds in his place. So, you know, we take the good with the bad, but for me, for the longest time, it was Tim McCarver.
I can go with Tom Brenneman personally. Nothing against him. It's just one time he called a Giants Cowboys game with Troy Aikman while Joe Buck was away, and it was the game where Dez Bryant had appeared to make a last second catch by his fingertips to get the winning touchdown, and Tom Brenneman yelled out "miracle touchdown" at it. It was like, first of all, no, not a miracle. It's just an exciting end to a game. And secondly, the play was eventually called back because it turned out he didn't have both feet in bounds. So for whatever reason, that moment has always stuck with me. Obviously, as a Met fan, I don't know if you guys remember Tom Brenneman and Steve Lyons getting in trouble with that fan during the 2006 NLDS. Right. Yeah. So Tom Brenneman has always kind of poked my ire a little bit for multiple reasons. I didn't think I would go into this saying it. I thought I was going to play it diplomatic, but apparently I haven't.
Well, thank you, Steve, for not putting me in a very uncomfortable situation there, as Matt knows. But for me, as a Braves fan, I despise the local announcers that are and have been national announcers. Chip Carey is just... I can't put into words how much I dislike Chip Carey.
Fisted.
His father was so excellent, and he is so not. And Joe Simpson may be the worst color commentator going today. And, of course, he'll be on TBS's coverage of the NLDS, which makes me want to go crazy.
I wonder how many fan bases Joe would actually choose their own announcers for that question. I feel like that's a unique position
when
there.
I watch Braves games now, I watch the road feed exclusively. I've done it for, I think, 2 or 3 years. I just can't deal with it anymore. And then they bring in guys like Dale Murphy and Tom Glavine, and I just want to go home and stop listening.
You know, it's funny. I won't say that I fall into this category, because I kind of find it laughable. But here in Columbus and Buckeye Nation, for years and years growing up, I heard from everyone how Brent Musburger was biased against the Ohio State Buckeyes. Now that I've grown older and I've matured and I've gained an understanding of how the industry works, I know now that that must have been that he had bets against Ohio State laying the points. But also how that transitioned to Kirk Herbstreit, that some fans here think that he has a bias against Ohio State because he works too hard to try and play it down the middle as a Buckeye alum. So I've always found those two to be fascinating. I don't think if I have one necessarily personally, just because throughout my history, a lot of my teams have been so bad that I haven't really had time to care about the announcers. I would have to think about that question myself. But I guess the default answer now is Mark May. with Ohio State, even though he doesn't call games. That's probably one of the uglier situations in sports right now. All right, I am contractually obligated by greater podcasting law to have a clean ending here and to go out with a bang. So, gentlemen, as we wrap things up, give me one crazy prediction for this month in sports media. Joe, I will put you on the spot last. I will actually start with Steve Lepore. Give me one crazy prediction for the rest of this month in sports media.
Francesa gets taken off of Fox, but he somehow finds another national outlet. Maybe CBS Sports Network will continue the WFAN hours at this. But I wonder if it's not as simple as Francesa leaves FS1 and goes to MSG. I wonder if somehow his people manage to complicate it and just strike up a whole new mess.
Maybe we'll see him join EPIX with the NHL. That's another story. Ken, your crazy prediction?
My crazy prediction, based on its great IPO today, Alibaba from China will buy ESPN and make it completely Chinese.
Well, I was actually hoping for maybe a less crazy prediction than that, but that's okay. That counts. We'll take that. Joe, give me your crazy prediction.
My crazy prediction is that there are even more crazy NFL arrests, and the ratings go up in week 3 and week 4.
I think that fits. All right, my crazy prediction to get us out, North Melbourne wins the AFL final series. They take the flag this year. Three people listening to this plus can understand what in the world I am talking about. Go Kangas, Drew Petrie, Ben Brown, Boomer Harvey, tipping North Melbourne to shock the world, or at least, you know, the two or three of us that still know what I'm talking about. All right, so our thanks to the roundtable for getting back together. This was fun, guys. The four horsemen are back. Our enforcer, our Arn Anderson, Joe Lucia, Ken Fang, as a senior member, you get to be the Ole Anderson of the group as we go back to the four horsemen of the mid-'80s. Steve Lepore, Nature Boy. And then I'll fill out as maybe J.J. Dillon of the group as the mastermind here. So our thanks to everyone that listened as well. It's been a real pleasure. And guys, we'll do this once again soon. So thanks for taking part and sticking with us tonight.
Thank you.
I can't believe we're going to leave the hot take grill lead so scorching after that Australian rules football.
Fox Sports 2, set your DVRs. You've got to get Fox Soccer Plus, though, for the grand final, which may be the craziest thing of all in this. I can't believe Fox hasn't listened to our cries to put the grand final on FS1. Hopefully, they get their heads on straight and get it figured out. All right, thanks, guys. Thanks, everyone, for listening. This is Matt Yoder. Happy trails from the Awful Announcing Podcast.